Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
The majority party has been kept almost completely in the dark throughout the negotiations of this budget. We were made numerous assurances about things that would be part of this budget and are not now there.
There's people in leadership positions that somehow found themselves there that forgot that when you're in a leadership position, you should also have a spine and you should have the back of your rank and file Democrats.
I'm really proud that we are able to deliver for some of the most vulnerable in our communities, going from the elderly, our tribal communities, students who will be able to have programs for after school. There are so many programs that are in here that I'm truly proud that were funded this year.
I'm not going to budge on this. It's my fiduciary responsibility as the Attorney General to make sure that this money is spent for all Arizonans and not just to backfill the budget of the Department of Corrections.
The Attorney General's characterization of these funds as backfilling the budget of ADCRR could be more accurately described as funding vital opioid use disorder treatment for a population that is disproportionately impacted by the opioid epidemic.
These executive actions by the president is going to keep families intact, keep them together. Benefits them, benefits the state of Arizona.
And joining me to talk about the final budget deal, the continuing controversy over money earmarked for helping treat opioid addiction and more are Matthew Benson of Veritas. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning.
And former state lawmaker Jen Longton. Jen, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So, Matt, let me start with you. A judge in Maricopa County has decided that Attorney General Chris Mays does not have to give a bunch of money from the opioid settlement to backfill money, as she is calling it, to the State Department of Corrections. This seems like it's going to be a pretty protracted fight and could potentially be a big issue if, like, in terms of having a balanced budget, if this money doesn't end up getting transferred.
There's no question. We're talking about $115 million that the state budget calls to be transferred from this national opioid settlement from the AG's office into the general fund, basically, to, as you put it, to help balance the budget. Now, look, I mean, legislators and the governor's office say this money is intended to be used to help deal with opioid issues in the state prison system, of which there are many issues there, of course. Mm-hmm. And the AG has, you know, countered that this would violate the terms of that settlement. I think, first off, in terms of the budget, it sets up real questions in terms of if this money is not allowed to transfer, then potentially you're going to have to cut $115 million somewhere else to balance the budget. But secondarily, I just think this is a fascinating one more aspect of this budding rivalry between the state's Democratic governor and Democratic attorney general.
Yeah, Jen, it is interesting. I mean, and Chris Mays was very clear early on, once the budget documents were leaked / released, that this was not going to fly with her, that this money in her mind would be illegally transferred. It's not what the money was set up for. It could, as she said, jeopardize future payments from the settlement to Arizona. And she really lobbied pretty hard to get this taken out of the budget. In the end, she wasn't successful there.
Right. I think that, at the top it said something about this money is going to help protect vulnerable people inside our prison population, and I believe that's what that money's there to do. I did go read at least that part of the blurb.
Okay.
I believe that the money will be appropriately spent on substance use disorders, opioid addiction within our prison system, and for those, coming out reentry. And I think it's a great way to spend that money.
So what do you think led to this remaining in the budget after the lobbying effort from Attorney General Mays? I mean, there are other funds presumably that could have been swept or other cuts that could have been made. Why do you think lawmakers and Governor Hobbs decided to stick with this one?
Well, I think it's really hard to do a deficit budget, and they had to make a lot of cuts in a lot of places. You know, more than $1 billion had to be cut out of the budget, and a lot of tough decisions had to be made. I think that they took a look at this and saw that they can take this money and use it inside our prison population to work on opioid issues. It sounds like the right thing to do.
Matt, I want to ask you about opposition. There's bipartisan support, bipartisan opposition to this budget. And I want to put you back in the Wayback Machine to when you were a reporter with the Arizona Republic during the last time we had divided government when Janet Napolitano was governor. I wonder what you see in terms of legislative Democrats and how they felt about their priorities in the budgets that then Governor Napolitano negotiated with Senate President Ken Bennett, House Speaker Jim Wyers, to what legislative Democrats are saying now about the budget negotiated by Katie Hobbs and Ben Thoma and Warren Peterson.
Look, I think under the Napolitano administration, it would have been virtually unheard of to see the sort of public criticism of the Democratic governor that you have seen this session and last session, for that matter. What it means to be a Democrat in this state has changed in a big way in that period of time. This is a very progressive caucus. I think during the Napolitano administration, she was clearly running the show for Democrats in this state. And, you know, that is less so the case at this point. You've got a number of Democratic statewides, including the Attorney General, including the Secretary of State. Mm-hmm. Folks who are potentially looking at running for governor themselves in 2026. So it's a much more – the power structure is much more diffused than it ever was under Napolitano. She was the unchallenged leader of the party.
Well, and Jen, it's worth probably noting that the Democratic caucuses in the legislature are bigger now than they were under Governor Napolitano. But, you know, you were a member of that caucus until fairly recently. I'm curious what you make of the fact that some Democratic leaders didn't vote for this budget, that we just heard a moment or two ago a Democratic lawmaker criticizing their leadership and the governor for what was in this budget or what was not in this budget.
Right. Well, with a one-vote majority in favor of the Republicans, that is a very tenuous lead. I think that Senator Mendez made a great statement on the floor as he was getting ready to vote, talking about how long he's been there and that folks who think that they were going to negotiate better than the governor did do that. And I'm paraphrasing, but somewhat from a position of naivete. Others might call it hubris to say that they weren't going to go in and negotiate as hard as the governor did. I don't know that, a member of Democratic leadership was going to cut a better deal than the governor did.
Do you feel, having read what you have of the budget, mm-hmm. do you feel like it was a good deal for Democrats?
Again, like everyone else, this is a deficit budget. And when you look at it, I think that, the adage is if we all come out of there equally unhappy, we did a good job. Mm-hmm. I am happy with it. You know, I'm happy that, for example, arts, DD and Area Agency on Aging were all going to be cut down to zero. Each one of them saw $2 million, which is something that I think is very helpful. I think that they made some good compromises on education and healthcare. And certainly, the SAFE Act along the border is something I strongly support.
Matt, on the Republican side, we know that a number of members of the Arizona Freedom Caucus were not impressed with this budget. They didn't vote for it and were pretty critical of especially Senate President Warren Peterson over this. Do you think this is a good deal on the Republican side?
I think it's very similar to the Democrats in terms of the grousing among some of the members of the Republican caucus, the Freedom Caucus you mentioned, but not just the far right. I mean, I think Matt Gress voted against this
yeah.
budget. Not a Freedom Caucus member, considered more center of the party.
Who was a budget director under former Governor Ducey.
Absolutely. Yeah. So again, like as Jen pointed out, I mean, bipartisan budgets kind of give everybody something to hate. That's just the nature of the beast.
All right. So, Jen, we mentioned that the Democratic caucus is bigger now than it was under Governor Napolitano. Governor Hobbs has clearly made it a point to try to win control of one or both of the legislative chambers. And to that end, the Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee said this week that it would be allocating $10 million for legislative campaigns as part of a summer program. Mm-hmm. This is something that Democrats have been talking about basically forever. I mean, at least as long as I've been here, about flipping one or both of the legislative chambers. Is this the year? I mean, that's sort of the perennial question here, right? Is this the year?
I'd like to believe it. you know, I chaired the ADLCC, the Arizona Democratic mm-hmm. Legislative Campaign Committee, for a couple of years, stayed very involved until my retirement from the legislature, and then the bylaws don't allow me to stay within the organization. I'd like to see every one of those $10 million come here. Arizona is the swing state, I think. And I think what's really important for an organization like that to remember is when you activate those state legislative races, there is no like up-ticket drop-off. If you activate those races, Senate, President, have a stronger pathway through our state. So I think that I'd like to see more of those national organizations looking at Arizona through that lens.
Does it hurt some of those efforts, though? I mean, we've seen poll after poll that show former President Trump leading President Biden in Arizona. Does that hurt that effort if the top of the ticket is maybe not going the way the Democrats want it to go?
I'm trying to just stay focused on what's happening in the state legislature, because one seat ties it in either chamber. Had there been a tie, we wouldn't have seen 2060 make it to the ballot and lots of these other
initiatives. Border
security measure. We wouldn't have seen this initiative on judges so that if they are voted out, they'll still get to stay in office, nullifying that. That wouldn't have made it to the ballot. So I'm just going to stay really focused on the state legislature. If I look elsewhere, I'll lose energy for what I need to do.
Matt, what do you think? I mean, there's a handful of swing districts in this state, in the legislature. Is there a realistic possibility that Democrats could potentially take one or both of the legislative chambers, you think?
Well, of course there's a possibility. I mean, look, I've been following closely the Arizona legislature since 2006, same as yourself.
Yeah.
Every cycle since then, Democrats have thought they had an opportunity to take one or both chambers, especially kind of in recent years. It hasn't happened yet. That doesn't mean it's not going to happen this year, but I think it's always an uphill battle for Democrats. There have been some key resignations and folks not running for offices that Democrats expected were going to. It's going to make it a more uphill fight, but it's certainly possible.
Do Republicans from the national perspective, is there the same – I guess, financial commitment, the same attention on the Arizona legislature as there seems to be from the Democratic side?
Well, I don't think we've seen some of the pledges of national money to support some of these legislative races on the right that you're seeing on the left. But you know, it's only June.
Thank you for reminding us. Let's go to an election. We have an election coming up. Still talking about the election from a couple of years ago. A judge this week, Matt, tossed attempted to dismiss a case against two Cochise County supervisors. They had been indicted by a grand jury that Attorney General Chris Mays was prosecuting. So this means it's going to go to trial. It sounds like it's going to be one kind of interesting trial.
Yeah, I think this is just, another aspect of the legal difficulties, the legal situation facing not just those supervisors in Cochise County, but the fake electors and the other folks facing investigations. So you're absolutely right. I think it is going to be fascinating, and hopefully it serves to dissuade similar activities this cycle and in future cycles involving county officials that decide they're just going to hold up certification for, political reasons.
Not sure that we know quite yet the timeline on this, but if this trial is happening around the time, let's say, maybe October-ish, early November, does it have any impact on the way people vote, do you think?
I don't think it affects how people vote necessarily, but again, I think it potentially serves as a reminder to those county officials across Arizona's 15 counties about their responsibilities and the legal peril they face if they decide to ignore the responsibility in front of them.
Jen, we've seen the Biden administration, for example, with commercial after commercial about referencing January 6th, referencing former President Trump's refusal to acknowledge the results of the 2020 election. Does a trial like this happening in Arizona, you mentioned this is a big swing state, does that sway anybody? Does it have any kind of impact on the 2024 election, do you think?
Again, I think I'm a little cynical about that. I think that part's kind of baked. People believe what they believe, and the outcome of this isn't going to change it. Matt, I'm not sure that this is going to cause county officials to say, oh, I could get in legal trouble if I don't follow the rules. I think for some of these folks, it's a badge of honor to do so. It's going to be fascinating to watch this play out.
Yeah, I think that is a fair assessment. So speaking of southern Arizona, and specifically in this case, the border, President Biden this week announced additional protections for spouses of some undocumented spouses and some others of folks who are in the country. Jen, this is sort of following up on his asylum rules he put into place, basically shutting off the asylum system for some amount of time. There's been a lot of cynicism, a lot of criticism of the president of, like, why are you doing this now as opposed to basically any time in the previous 3.5 years? What do you think of that argument?
Why are you doing this now instead of any time in the past 3 years? Certainly, I looked at the announcement and said, finally. There's a lot of work to do on the border, and it has to come through the federal government. I'm really happy with this particular action. I know a lot of people who are impacted by it. And I think the other piece that we're not talking about enough is the part that's going to allow especially like kids headed for college right now or finishing high school who are too young to have gotten DACA, to have become DACA recipients, those young people, as they leave school, can legally get jobs in the United States. And I think that's going to be important. So I'm pleased that we're finally there, and I want to see a lot more.
Matt, is it too cynical to suggest that this is President Biden trying to walk that fine line between looking like he's doing something on the border but also trying to shore up a part of his base?
Of course it's not too cynical. I mean, this is politics. It's an election year. Everybody understands that the border and illegal immigration generally are arguably the president's biggest vulnerability outside of maybe inflation. Biden is trying to triangulate on this issue. I mean, it was a number of weeks ago he announced, asylum reforms, mm-hmm. stronger rules, trying to cut down on the wave of illegal immigrants coming over the border and basically gaming the asylum system in this country. And then, he took a lot of heat for that on the left. And then primarily, and then now he's come back around and said, okay, I'll grant, legal status to this 500,000 people who are in this population that is the most sympathetic. We're talking about spouses who are married to somebody in the country legally and who've been here for at least 10 years. And as Jen pointed out, and, certain population of their children, dreamers basically, but those that were, particularly young. At that, when DACA was issued. And so, again, I think he's trying to sort of triangulate this issue and thread that needle. Is it possible? We're going to find out. But I think that's the politics are at play here.
Jen, you mentioned DACA, and it's worth noting that DACA is still the subject of litigation. Its future mm-hmm. is not secure at this point, nor presumably if somebody challenges this new executive action, because it is an executive order, not a law passed by Congress. Does that impact at least the impact on the people that it's aiming to impact? I hate to keep using the word impact, but the fact that all of this it could go away, sort of at a moment's notice based on an election, the results of an election or a judge's ruling.
I'm not a fan of governing through executive order. I think they're important, used well, but they can be reversed by the next executive or the one after that. Again, this is an issue that we need Congress to work with the president to come up with a solution. We were so close to getting this done until it was politicized for the presidential election by the other guy. I think with there, we could get this done. We know what to do. It just takes political wherewithal to get it done. Just takes political yeah, wherewithal to
that
get
seems
it
like
done.
That's a big just.
It is a big just these days. It shouldn't be so hard to make the right choices.
Matt, Governor Hobbs this week made an announcement that I think everybody saw coming, which is that she's going to appeal the ruling in the case about her trying to go around the Senate to appoint directors of state agencies. Talked about the Cochise County. That could be a really interesting trial. This one could also be potentially interesting and far-reaching depending on what the outcome is, right?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, look, you've got this standoff between the governor and the legislature in terms of these directors running state agencies because, you know, of course, the legislature kind of set up this committee that blocked a lot of the governor's directors for the longest time, forever. Basically, whoever was named governor sort of was able to put in charge of these state agencies who they deemed fit. And the legislature had this process to approve them. But we had never seen previously the situation where they were being just blocked basically almost as a group. And so this court decision, how this appeal plays out, I think is really going to be impactful for certainly this administration, but all administrations going forward, anytime you have divided government, which I think is going to be a feature in the state of Arizona for a number of years.
Jen, we talked about the efforts to flip the legislature. Is this the kind of issue that the governor and Democratic candidates can run on, or is it maybe too far in the weeds for voters to really understand and care about?
Oh, I don't. I think you can pull out the important parts of this that voters can and will care about. And I want to go back to something Matt just said. It's not a standoff between the governor and the legislature. It's an issue with a couple of Freedom Caucus senators. And, you know, we do have a separation of powers. When I served under a Republican governor, I would often remind folks that we are co-equal branches of government. The governor oversees the agencies, and the governor's picks to run those agencies shouldn't be subject to the kind of witch hunt. I'm trying to think of a better – I don't have a neutral term for it.
There were deep investigations, I think,
is what
Senator
Hoffman
called them.
We will go with deep investigations that weren't even necessarily relevant to their abilities to run the organizations that they were chosen to run. The reason the appointment process exists and has existed for forever is to prevent some cronyism, right? So you can't just put your brother in charge of whatever – and, you know, your brother can run a gas station but not the Department of Corrections, right? Mm-hmm. And that has not been what DINO has set out to do.
That's the committee that was set up to vet these candidates. Matt, in the last, like, 30 seconds or so we have, is this a useful issue for Governor Hobbs to be able to say, look, I'm fighting the Republicans in the legislature. This is why we have to flip the legislature if you're Governor Hobbs?
No.
Voters don't care?
No.
No, you don't think the obstruction
nope.
I mean, at every door I've knocked on, they want you to stop the gridlock, and they see this as one of those issues. I
don't believe it.
No?
Nope.
Okay.
I think voters care about the kitchen table issues, inflation, illegal immigration, health care, good schools. I don't think many voters are following closely who's running Department of Child Safety or any of these state agencies.
All right.
Can we
get
another 20 minutes?
I wish. We'll have you back, I promise. That is Matt Benson, Jen Longton. Thank you both for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.